Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to another edition of Light Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast half full editor. Joining me, as always, is my colleague and co-host, David Weintraub.
Howdy.
Dave and I, as we promised in our last episode, we want to do a tribute and a memorial to our friend and colleague and, you know, half full columnist, Gary Regan, who passed away in November of 2019, just a couple of months ago. And, I think it was actually Dave's idea to bring in some special guests for this. And I couldn't think of two better people than Dale DeGroff, who we have spoken about actually quite a bit on this podcast over the last 2 years.
Some of it in a complimentary fashion.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Dale, who really needs no intro. I mean, if you've listened to Life Behind Bars before, but he is the father of the rebirth of the cocktail, a real bartender's bartender. I think just about everybody in this industry has some story, some connection where Dale sort of stepped in and mentored them and helped them. And, you know, one of, you know, Gary Regan's oldest friends in this industry. I always think of the two of you together. So thank you for coming in.
I'm delighted to be here on Gary's behalf.
It takes several people to fill his shoes.
It does.
Yes.
I think the four of us could barely do it.
No.
or to drain his cocktail glass. And then also we have with us Julie Reiner, who is, you know, a fixture of the New York bar scene, owner of Clover Club and Leyenda in Cobble Hill, and one of Gary's longtime friends. And, you know, it's wonderful to have you here. And,
thanks so much. Yeah. It's happy to be here.
While we start to talk, Gary, you know, super fan of the Negroni, as it sort of rose to, prominence in, the last 10 years or so in the U.S., Gary is one of the big proponents. I have tasked Dale to whip us up a round of Negronis. We're using a gin that was Todd and Vixen's, that was Gary's, I guess, last project.
It was his final spirits project.
Yeah, that he was consulting on. And of course, to make the Negroni, we have this crazy spoon stirrer. It serves the fun.
I don't know what to call it. I mean, it looks like a sex toy, but
you beat me to the punch there.
Gary was famous for finger stirring Negronis, where he would literally put his finger into your glass and stir it around. It was a great party trick. It was a good trick for him because he'd show up. There'd be a team of bartenders actually making the Negronis, and then he would just sort of finish them with a stir. At some point, he with Cocktail Kingdom, they did an actual kind of cast of his finger, and now as we have here, this crazy stirrer at the end of it is exactly a replica of Gary's finger. So for the rest of
it's a little less wet.
For the rest of
time, probably cleaner.
More sanitary for the rest of time. This, I think, is
never anything under the nails.
No, never. Not on this thing. Dishwasher safe.
I always thought Gary's nails were clean, I have to say.
Yeah, I
always. You know, he was a bartender.
Yeah. I mean, I think when he knew he was going to stick his finger in a Negroni, that he really made sure to scrub well.
One would hope. But,
maybe not on every single occasion, because who does that?
Or as the night wore on. And obviously the Negroni, which is equal parts, give or take, of obviously Campari, the sort of super red Italian aperitif, one part gin, and then one part sweet vermouth, all equal parts, although...
There are different schools on that,
I was just about to say, Gary once took me for task about jiggering, because he always believed that with a lot of the ingredients, you had to taste them to make sure that they, you know, were in harmony. So a recipe couldn't be finite in his mind, which I agree, but was obviously... a terrifying concept for a writer or an editor. Yeah.
Not to mention many of our younger bartenders these days.
One-ish part gin, one-ish part.
Yeah.
You know.
Depending on how you're feeling.
And I don't remember exactly.
Ice, ladies and gentlemen?
You are
is the only way to go.
You are King Cocktail, so we're in your hands. But, I don't know. I'm not sure the Negroni would have become as big as it was.
Sound effects. I love it. This is new for us.
I know. I'm glad that we brought them in.
I know.
The Foley artists and bartenders.
Want to lead us in the morning?
Yeah, I would just like to say to Gaz, we're all going to come and join you one of these days, and the tab will probably go to me.
For sure.
Cheers.
Cheers.
I was a little dubious that Dale could pull it off, but I'm glad that you were able to do it.
Bartender. I clean my messes up as I go.
Well, this is the first Negroni you've ever made, so.
I know.
Well, maybe the first with Gary's finger.
Probably not even. But he used the actual finger.
Yes. Yeah. For the record, he used the finger stirrer.
I actually made him wrong for years. I had it on my menu. It's really as 87. You know, it was on my earliest menus. And I used to serve him up. Mm. Until the Italians came and said, "Ma, what are you doing?"
Well, on the other hand, you know, it's pretty good up. I still like them like that if I'm having it before dinner.
I found for Americans, it got too bitter.
Too bitter.
Yeah. Because the dilution is what.
Yeah. It opens it up. And the gin itself, you can really, I never got the chance to talk to Gary about why he created the botanicals like they were. And Jeffrey Morgenthaler and a few other folks also weighed in. I think Leo Robichek and. Mm-hmm. But it works, I think, very well in a Negroni with a lot of botanicals stand up to the vermouth and the Campari. Sure.
So, that makes a very appetizing morning drink.
Good
morning. I mean, that's how Gary probably started every morning, right? So that's at least how I'd like to think of him, you know, wake up.
I think of
dressing robe, having his morning Negroni.
I mean, somebody's got to start with the anecdote, so I'll start with one.
Yes, please.
I was in Kentucky with Gary and his semi-estranged wife at the time, Marty, and whiskey expert Jim Murray.
A lot of personalities in that room.
Yeah, no, it was a pretty dull lot. But we were there, guests of Heaven Hill, and we ended up in our hotel room drinking a lot of Heaven Hill whiskey with Parker Beam and his son Craig and Amy Presky, who was their press person. And these are also fairly reserved people who really don't have a lot to say.
Nope.
or the opposite. But anyway, and we sampled a good amount of the product range of Heaven Hill. And I woke up the next morning and, you know, the mirror is never particularly kind to me, but boy, it was ugly that morning. It was just looking at me and I was looking at it and it was not happy at all. And neither was I. So I went downstairs. We were staying at the old Brown Hotel. I went downstairs to round up some kind of hangover cure, anything, you know, from a revolver to something. Anyway, and I see sitting at the bar, which was closed, but sitting at the bar, this is like 15 years ago, is Gary with this device in front of him. It's like a little keyboard with a BlackBerry plugged into it. You know, he always had all kinds of high-tech toys. And he looked just as bad as I did. And I would not have dreamed of doing any kind of work of any kind in that state. It was just not possible. And there's Gary. I said, you know, what are you doing, my friend? And he says, oh, I'm working on my column. Doesn't your head hurt? Of course it hurts. But, you know, he had a work ethic.
Oh, yeah.
He was the definition of just, you know, on with the show no matter what.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and I would use any excuse to punk out, like, on my column, as Noah knows. I've tried them all many times. Yeah. He's got a catalog.
Funny because it's true. And I think Gary, like, you know, as he got ever more famous, and he was this sort of raconteur and bon vivant. But we kind of forget that, you know, when I first met him 20 years ago, give or take, I mean, the only books that were really available about cocktails and spirits were ones that he wrote or co-wrote. I mean, there weren't many others.
No, there really weren't.
I mean, there were literally, and the ones that had been in print forever. And then, you know, it was like a desert until, Dale, you published your book, The Craft of the Cocktail, which kind of blew stuff up and changed everything. And but in between that period, I mean, it was.
I mean, there was Gary's Modern Classics, which was that was the first time somebody had put like reasonably good new drinks together between covers in ages.
Yeah.
I mean, all the when I signed a contract to do the Esquire Drinks book in 2000 or 2001, the publisher handed me their other cocktail book, which was from Australia. All the drinks were green and neon, and all of them had Midori in them and two other liqueurs at least. You know, and that was like, that was their idea of a cocktail book.
Actually, in 1998, a young bartender from the Townhouse in Emeryville, California, wrote that wonderful book with Laura Moorhead.
Yeah. Cocktail. Paul Harrington, yeah.
Paul Harrington, and that was a beautiful book.
But literally, you could count them on like one hand.
There was not much.
And Gary's book on bourbon. I mean, that was so far ahead of the like current. So I mean, you're right. He did have a real work ethic, and I think sometimes it gets lost now because he was such a big personality that people forget that he was really serious.
I'm packing up house now. Yeah. And I'm packing up my library, and I keep coming by more and more and more of Gary's books.
I know.
I forgot how many I had, you know.
Yeah, he kept writing them.
And he wrote that column in the Chronicle for a year. I mean, it was the most famous.
And the yearly manual.
Right.
You know, speaking as a drinks historian, his commitment to that was really quite strong, you know, and he wanted to get things right, which is for somebody who we think of as being this just character and bon vivant and agent of chaos, you know, he really wanted to get the stories accurately, you know, and Joy of Mixology, the history part there was the first like long form accurate treatment of mixology since William Grimes's like 15 years before or 12 years before. And Gary's was, you know, even more detailed. And
what year did that come out?
That was 2003 it came out, but it was supposed to come out earlier.
Yeah.
He wrote it earlier and then it got delayed.
Yeah. That was one of the first books that I got my hands on. I opened Flatiron Lounge in 2003. And up until that point, I was sort of just flying in the wind trying to figure out what to do. And there wasn't any information really out there. Dale walked into my bar and I was like, who are you? Yeah. I had no idea.
That still happened.
Right? Yeah. but I quickly, you know, grasped on. I was like, oh, tell me something. Tell me anything. Right. You know, teach me. But that book, you know, was really an eye opener for me, you know, and I was still learning, but yet had opened a bar. And I was so thankful that he had written it. And the way that he separated the drinks into categories really made a lot of sense for young bartenders who were trying to make their way through and learn about classic cocktails, but still trying to create new cocktails for the masses was a great thing to have.
And I mean, I think his own story is really interesting. I mean, Dave, you wrote, of course, a history of Gary, but he'd come over from Blackpool, England, right? I mean, which is and you know, with I guess there were a whole bunch of folks from Blackpool who'd come over to work in bars in New York, you know, in the '70s. And I remember him talking about Fern bars on the Upper East Side, and you know, all the way on York and First. And I mean, it's kind of amazing that out of all of those crazy bars were certainly not craft cocktail bars, you know.
Absolutely not. But, you know, he was always learning. That was the thing about Gary he was a very curious man. Mm-hmm. He just always wanted to see what was going on and to look into things. And I think that's one of the traits that keeps you young in this world is just being curious, wanting to know what happens or what's going on or how did that work. And and he was always big on that. So even in the Fern Bar days, you know, he was like collecting recipes and you know, he was like, let me know all the recipes, you know, which is rather than just, they don't need to, you know, I don't think he treated his customers with contempt like so many bartenders did back then.
Never. No.
Yeah.
And Gary is Gaz, I guess I want to call him Gaz now, as a presenter. I mean, I never... Where, you know, he traveled the same as I did and David does. I never was at a festival or anywhere when Gary was performing that I did not attend, because every time I attended, you know, there was some
something about his past, about his dad, about his life, his pub, about this, about that, that was something I hadn't heard before. But there is one story, and I think all of us know it, but maybe the people listening don't. When his dad had the Prince Rupert, was it, in the bad neighborhood?
Yeah, it was the Prince Rupert, exactly.
Right. His dad, there was a real tough guy in town named Blosh. And Blosh, every saloon owner, a pub owner in the town was quaked when Blosh came in.
In Blackpool. Okay.
He was famous. Fisticuffs and that
in
kind
like
of
the
thing.
50s.
It wasn't in Blackpool. It was outside of Manchester. And it was in a really tough part outside 50s, of Manchester. 60s, I
guess. Bolton, you said?
Yeah, I think it was in Bolton. Yeah. And it was in the 60s. Yeah.
So the only person who didn't quake when Blosh came in the door was Bernard?
Bernard, yeah.
And Garrett said, in fact, Bernard insisted that as soon as Blosh came in, if he was upstairs, to call him immediately because he wanted to take care of Blosh. And when Blosh came in, he'd come up to the bar and Bernard would say, "Good evening, Mr. Blosh. What can I get for you?" You know, he'd serve him a bitters or whatever. And then he'd have another and then he'd have a third. Absolute on his best behavior. And Bernard was there chatting, you know, with him, happy to see him, you know, and showing him a lot of deference. And then after his third one, there was always music in Gaz's dad's bars. He always had a little orchestra playing, and this was no exception. This was a regular routine. After his third one, he got up and he sang Danny Boy so beautiful that there were people crying in the beer. Mm-hmm. And Gaz,
this guy was terrifying,
perceives it like this. He said, "Blosh, he wasn't mean. He was just afraid. He was afraid that people wouldn't respect him. He was afraid of the way he would be treated. So when my dad gave him respect, he gave love in return."
Yeah.
When he sang that song, Danny Boy. You know, and that's a beautiful story.
Yeah.
About bartending, about being a customer, about everything. Yeah.
about being human, you know?
Yeah.
And I think when Gary came here and he brought the bar with him. He brought the pub. And when there was a bunch of us with him, it felt like we were, a crowded pub, all having a good time. And when it was just the two of us, it felt like, you're in a quiet pub with a bartender and he's polishing glasses and putting away stuff and sharing wisdom and maybe pour something that he'd been saving for himself. And,
He was always so companionable. Yeah. People, we were all at the tribute that we had here to him in New York the other night. And a lot of people spoke about, how Gary inspired them, which he did. But for me, the thing that was the highest praise I could say is he was always good company. He was somebody you could sit and talk to. Sure. And if you were passing time with Gary, you were doing something.
Yeah.
It was good. Yeah. And I would say that about anybody here. That's a beautiful thing in this world. This world is a hard world, I think, and as we see every day. And to have somebody who makes it a pleasure to pass your time is that's a rare gift. And he had that in spades.
Yeah.
And we're in the business of doing that, aren't we? And aren't we lucky because we are? We're in the business of one side of the bar or the other of being able to connect with people if we choose.
Mm-hmm.
On any level we choose on a regular basis. And that for human beings, it's not available to everybody. It's a nice thing.
It's a nice thing.
I first met Gaz on a trip to Peru.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Famous trip.
The famous trip to Peru.
Infamous, I think, is the word you're looking for.
But it was really funny because we were traveling, from Lima to Cusco, and we got on this bus, and I sat down in a seat, and Gaz sat next to me and was like, "I'm going to be your seatmate." and I was like,
"Oh, cool.
Great."
Okay. Yeah.
"Who are you?" Just as I didn't know who Dale was.
Yeah.
I was like, "All right." I had read Gary's book.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sat next to me. I was like, "Oh, you're the guy." But it was so great because we spent a lot of time on this bus and we went to Machu Picchu and we went to all of these places, and I would get back on the bus and just sit with Gaz and we would talk the whole time and drink Pisco Sours everywhere we went. And Gaz, of the entire group of people, was the only one who didn't get sick on the trip. We were all like, "Well, he must be pickled." He's like the only one.
Well, I remember him telling me a story. I mean, he at a certain point, he created his own with his former wife, Marty, the Regan's Bitters, the orange bitters. And that's why the S is after the, you know, it's multiple Regans who created it. He was always told me, like, no, it's not apostrophe S, it's S apostrophe. And they created the orange bitters because there were no orange bitters, like, widely available that he could get, right? So he created his own. They put a photo of Gary on the bottle, which I still have on my desk, right? And it's, you know, back in the day when Gary had a very big, crazy beard that looked sort of like a revolutionary Civil War, you know, reenactor.
Yeah, he looked, kind of looked like John Brown.
Yeah, yeah. It was sort of like the Whiskey Rebellion right here.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a sort of picture, kind of lithograph of him on the bottle. And he said that once on a trip like this, he sat down next to a young bartender and they were talking, great conversation. And at one point, the bitters came up because she clearly had no idea who Gary was. And he said, oh, so what do you think of the bitters? Like, oh, I love them. They're great. But who's the old guy on the label? And Gary just thought it was the funniest thing he'd ever heard. He's like, yeah. I'm the old guy.
He had lost his beard at that time. Yeah. That bartender. Yeah. Tinder's name was Bonnie because I was on the trip. She was from London. Now she's in Australia, right. And she's actually, I think she left the bar business maybe. No, she's still in the bar business. She's up in Brisbane, I think. A lovely woman. And another little story about that. Yeah. We all had been at La Capilla drinking heavily. Yeah. So the groups of us are walking back towards our two hotels, which are close to each other. And we come to this big plaza with like a whole bunch of graffiti on a wall there. So I don't know if it was Dre or his partner, Henry or somebody. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe it was Gaz. I don't know. And they said, hey, Bonnie. And they gave Bonnie a camera. And we all went over the wall. We all turned around and mooned the camera. And Bonnie's standing in the middle of the square. And suddenly we see this look on her face. And she runs down the street over there waving her hands. Hi, hi. And so we all pull up our pants real quick. This Jeep comes along with four guys with submachine guns.
Oh,
yeah. She said, oh, my God, this is so cool. Can I have a picture with you guys? And she jumps in the front seat of the Jeep. And gives one of us the camera so she could get her picture taken. She saved our asses.
Yeah, she
literally.
Did. Yeah, she did. I've seen
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
As Jeeps come around in Mexico, lighting off fireworks at midnight in a very quiet village, which was a very bad idea. But we might have been hitting the mezcal
Bonnie
a little
Shearson,
bit too.
I think she was a lovely woman.
That's funny.
At a certain point, Gary obviously had a very serious case of cancer of the jawline and tongue, and he was able to survive, and you know, he lost the beard, but he came through fire and almost reinvented himself like a phoenix.
Astonishingly,
I know.
And he became Gaz out of this, you know, what would have crippled most mortal humans. You know,
most people would sulk for the rest of their lives with that kind of an injury, but he was like emboldened by it.
He was,
you know,
and then he started wearing eyeliner.
It was
just on one eye.
Just
one
on eye. One. Oh yeah, just I had the eye. Joy of actually applying it for him once at one of the world class.
That was the time it wasn't crooked.
When he didn't have a smear.
Yeah,
which was hysterical. You know, standing there putting eyeliner on Gaz
on the under, like
and he wanted it a very specific way. You know, it was like it had to be. And then he showed me the photo of what it needed to look like that, and then the pointing at the camera.
Yeah.
You know, we have all these photos of all of us, and it was always Gaz with the point, and everybody joined, you know, everybody followed suit.
Which I guess you can use the stirrer for too if you want.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Now we can all.
Well, he wasn't wearing the eyeliner when I spent a long weekend in Belfast with him and his cousin and nephew. But his cousin and nephew came over from Lancashire. And, you know, you could see, like, it was very interesting because you could see where Gaz went in a completely different direction. Uh-huh. But you could see also, I mean, these guys are fairly hard guys, you know. And, I mean, it's a tough part of the world up there. And, you know, they're not people to let all their feelings hang out.
Gary wasn't a big guy. I mean, he was certainly heavier back in the day, but he
was scrappy.
That's what I heard. Yeah. I never saw it, that side of him, but Jimmy Duke did.
Oh, yeah.
And he said he could handle himself just fine if the occasion rose, you know.
And back before, you know, the cancer, he definitely was much bigger temper. He hadn't found meditation yet. I remember walking through Whiskey Fest with him early, like, you know, it was before it like actually started. And it was just press. And it was like him and Marty and I. And this was, I mean, probably 02, maybe. 03 at the most. I don't know. And Gary is, you know, in like a stage whisper about every booth we pass, like, ah, like that thing. Like, like they make that in, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, ah, this, what, like asking people look terrified. You know, came through. I was just, you know, I just said nothing, walking behind them, you know, trying not to laugh.
You know what blew me away of at the memorial that we had this last Monday? So many wonderful speakers. Among them was this old friend of ours, Linnell, who had a liquor shop here in town and then went down in Birmingham, Alabama now. She was – the last time she spent time with Gaz, you know, he had kind of a breakdown. He was, you know – but the one thing he said to her that just slammed into her, she said – he said, I met Amy 15 years ago. And I wished I'd known earlier that I could be this happy.
Oh, yeah.
And wow, I always thought he was a pretty happy guy, but this was a big deal.
Yeah. He was much mellower, you know, in later years. And yeah. And I mean, he was still mischievous. I mean, I was with him in Cognac, you know. This is where you see people often is on trips, and you know if you're in this business, and we were
it's a terrible business.
It's a terrible business.
Weird.
I know we're in all these strange places.
For our family listening, these trips are terrible. They take
hard
their
work
toll on us.
They're hard work.
Nonstop.
They're grim.
It's the worst.
But
we worked the whole time.
The whole time.
Especially those Hawaiian
from
trips.
Sun up to sun
rough,
down.
Rough.
20-hour days.
Shh. Get me in trouble, Dale.
Well, this time we were enjoying ourselves in tasting cognac and cellars and all that kind of stuff, which is really extremely pleasant. And then they said, well, we're going to go and take a barge down the Charente River. And Gary, would you and Dave make cocktails for everybody on the barge? And we were like, okay. They said, what would you need? We said, well, you need some cognac. We have that.
Right.
We'll need some Cointreau. We figured sidecars. Everybody likes a sidecar. We have that. And we'll need some lemons and ice. And they said, well, let's go to the supermarket. And so they pull up in front of the Hypermarché, the hypermarket there and in Cognac, outside of Cognac. And Gary and I go in. We find the lemons, no problem. But we can't find the ice counter or the ice machine. We finally ask somebody in our broken French, and they said, no, we don't sell ice here. And we're like, oh, shit, we're not in America, are we? They don't sell ice. Right. And we're like, we'll have to do something. And then we're walking out, and we pass the fish counter, a whole display of fish on crushed ice. Oh. And, you know, Gary and I look at each other, and our looks spoke a lot. His said, you know, those fish look really fresh. And I said, yeah, it looks like my looks kind of said, it looks like they were just put out there. And we kind of looked at each other. Is this too crazy? And, you know, Gary was like, this is not too crazy. He was that kind of person that, you know, if you had a crazy idea, he would go in with you no matter what. I mean, it was always better to do the crazy thing and than to regret not doing it. So we kind of like got them to get us a couple shopping bags and lifted up the shrimp, which looked really fresh, and scooped them full of ice. And we never said a word to anybody. So we had our ice.
Wow.
And we made cocktails. They didn't taste really fishy at all.
A hint of shrimp.
Just a little. There was a little umami in them.
Very American twist on the sidecar.
But, you know, it's like he was not the person to hold you back on the situation like that.
No.
Was he with us on the Cognac trip when we went to the party shop to pick up the costumes and stuff? I don't think he was.
You're undermining this whole thing about it. This is such hard work, both of you.
I know. Like, well, we had to make cocktails on a barge with fish ice.
That's cool.
It's a challenge.
It was a challenge. Yeah. It was hard work.
For 10 hours.
I loved how over the years, with every email exchange or conversation that Dave was anywhere near having to do with Gaz would razz you so hard. Oh. It was like, you're cheap. You never pick up the tab.
Do you want to tell the origin of that
Well, it was
story?
On that same trip. Is we land in Paris and they say, okay, you've got the afternoon off after an overnight flight in coach from America.
Oh, thank you.
So, you know, there's that aspect. You're not usually getting right. treated super nice on the travel part. But then they pump you full of very good booze. So there is that. But anyway, so we had the afternoon off and we said, let's go to Harry's Bar. And we go to Harry's New York Bar, which opened in 1911 and is still there and is just glorious. And it was the service there can be rude sometimes. It was not rude this afternoon that we were there. And the sun was shining in over our shoulder and we were sitting at the point of the bar and we had a sidecar and we had another sidecar and it turns out they didn't take credit cards, and I didn't have any euros, and Gary did. So he paid for the two rounds, and then we had another round. And I thought, well, I'll just stop at a cash machine and, you know, get him back, and you know, and suddenly we had way overstayed our time, and we had to go off to dinner. And I did steal him an ashtray from the Ritz, which was the size of a very large coffee table book. Because so that you wouldn't steal them. He never mentioned that part.
Right.
That I stole the Ritz ashtray for him and put it in my bag. So Colin Peter Field will hate me forever. But anyway, it turns out I couldn't get him back. I couldn't get to a cash machine. There weren't that many at the time. And
branded ever since.
Branded ever since. He finally forgave me, but I still owe him drinks. I'll always owe him drinks.
Every opportunity. Oh, yeah. I call you a cheapskate.
I remember I was looking back through email. Emails, you know, before today and the tribute the other night. And, you know, he even referenced it in some dinner, like, you know, it was from like, you know, 10 years ago. Like, I mean, is Dave going to be there? Like, you know, it's like, okay. Like, and then somebody was like, oh, I'm not going to say that. But like, Gary,
you know, he wouldn't have done it if we weren't friends.
No. Yeah. And it was that's done with
he
love.
He didn't do that to people who couldn't defend themselves. And you know,
think, yeah,
that's true.
Well, and you know, he would take these trips that I would never take. You know, David maybe would never take because you go overseas. You know, you want to make some bread. You know what
right,
I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
You're flying and you're flying coach. You know, right. You want to make. You know, I put a minimum to go.
Right, sure, of course.
Yeah. Over there, but you know, Gaz, they would call him up from Slovakia or they'd call him up from Poland, and he'd say, "Well, just give me some walking around money while I'm there."
Yeah.
And that's the way that's because he wanted to take care of those bartenders and bring this thing
Which
to
is
them,
why
you know?
He was able to like reach so many people and mentor them. And, you know, he was kind of up for anything, you know.
Well, when I was in Belfast with him, he asked for the walking around money and we landed and they gave us each an envelope of maybe £300. That's not, you know, what we would charge to do this as work. But it made for a very fun weekend in Belfast. Yeah. We're like, ooh, let's see now.
Did you ever work in Russia?
No, I
they give you all of your pay the day you arrive in American $100 bills.
Wow.
I do it in
– So that you can spend them all while you're there.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So well, I love that all of Gary's emails – I don't know when he went to this, but they were always in that bizarre font.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like a very cheery
Comic
font.
Sans.
Comic
it's always
Sans.
In Comic Sans.
And he had his logo. And no matter like, you know, he'd be sending me an angry note about one of his stories. I mean, Half Full, you know, we're sort of honored to publish, I guess, Gary's last pieces. And, you know, it'd be like a note like, why did you put that word in all caps, but in this crazy Comic Sans? So it's like really hard to take it seriously, right? That he's like irate over one word, right?
Yeah.
You know, or like one phrase. And it's in Comic Sans. And it's just like, Gary, like mixed messages here, man. Like, can we put like the serious talk in like, you know, Times New Roman or something?
No, he wouldn't do that.
All Comic Sans. It was amazing. And I don't know when that started, but as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
There's a young editor over at Random House who is the editor who worked on Gaz's second edition of the Joy of Mixology and also is working on my second edition.
Which just came out.
The Crafted Cocktail.
Yeah. The Joy came
the
out
new
I
Crafted
guess,
Cocktail.
Last so she's, year, year and a half.
2018, yeah, yeah. Came out at the end of 2018.
She was shell-shocked when I got to her already.
Oh, I can only imagine.
And then.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, the meditations are kicking in the second email. Like the first email would be like irate and then the second like, okay, that's okay. Okay, that's fine. Just going forward.
Yeah, like going if you don't, forward.
If next, like this is what I said, this is what is published. Like, yeah. You know, like, I know that, Gary. Like, yep, uh-huh. Like, going forward, it doesn't sound like me. So, you know, like, okay, well, next time we'll try again.
I get that, though.
Watch
your tone of voice.
Yeah.
I've lost mine in the past, so I get
it. Yeah, that's important with, you know.
I was like, so.
Especially when you're a columnist, which he was.
Whether or not you agree with modern rules of grammar. Such is life, you know. Yeah.
Hey, Jimmy Breslin never paid attention to modern rules of grammar.
Who needs no, he grammar? Wrote what he thunk.
The spouse is out of the house. Right, yeah.
Well, that would explain a lot, Gary, you know, learning how to write from all the Breslin's columns and the papers on all the pubs that he worked
in. I think he basically learned how to write from everybody who was talking to him at Jimmy Duke's bar at Drake's Drum. You know?
Wow. Well, it's sort of – and then, I mean, he went from there to – I mean, sort of Gary's almost kind of at the forefront of so many of these trends. Like, you know, he goes from there – to that bar in the South Street Seaport where they had one of the first big, you know, selections of scotch, like anywhere in New York. I mean, it's – which was so ahead of its time.
I mean, and Drake's Drum was really kind of ahead of its time for the 70s style bars.
I wish I had walked into that joint.
It was I remember – I don't think I ever went in. I remember walking by it because it was colorful. You know, it had British flags all over it and stuff.
I was a P.J. Clark's guy, so I never went to the I didn't cheat on my –
Right. Right. I hardly ever went up to that neighborhood because the drinks were always too expensive.
Besides, I was broken. Yeah. Frank Conifer used to buy me.
There you go.
Did you make it down to the one in the South Street Seaport, what it was called?
I did. The North Star,
That's right.
Yeah,
me too. That's where I met him. Yeah.
Karen and I used to go, my wife and I used to go, not frequently because we were in Brooklyn and poor, but we went sometimes.
Yeah. Good.
So the first time that Gaz came up to do his radio show at the Rainbow Room with Paul. What was their show called?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
Drinks with Gary and Paul.
Yes. He would come up there pretty regularly.
Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah. Well, it was really lovely to invite your
You can take your pick.
Keep going. Just keep going.
It was lovely to invite your guests to the Rainbow Room. And who doesn't want to be on a radio show at the famous Rainbow Room?
Right, of course.
Hi, atop, you know, 31 Grove Center, coming to you from blah, blah, blah. And so always the bartender got to say a few words. You know, they would. And that first night, I'm pretty sure it was that first night. After it was all over, he comes to the bar and we're all feeling no pain. I don't know what we were drinking during the show. I wasn't. They were.
Right.
I'm still behind the bar. Gaz looks over and says, I'm going to sing a song. And I'm like, okay. The bar's pretty full.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, I have said, a feeling okay. I know this song.
And he sings O'Reilly's Daughter.
That's the only song he knew.
Full throated. And for the first two stanzas, I'm like, oh my God, what have I done? You know, but as people got into it, you know, which they did.
Yeah.
Not everybody.
No.
Because it's a filthy song.
Right.
But I just finally, just like when you're drowning, you just say, oh, what the hell?
Yep.
They say it's the easiest way to go.
I made sure to put the text of that song in the tribute booklet because, you know, he would have wanted it there.
It took a page out of old Blush's.
on our Peru trip, at one point we were driving down a dirt road, you know, it's somewhere where it was just dark and the buses going back and forth and Charlotte Voicy was on the bus. There was all these people and Gaz stood up and took the microphone and started singing this song and he's holding on and he's swaying back and forth, but he was not going to sit down because he really wanted people to see
him. Yeah.
And he sang this whole song about self-love. I was like, God. It was the funniest part of the trip. It was
amazing.
Classic Gaz.
What was amazing hearing all these different people talk about Gary or Gaz was that he had a different relationship with everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, and what everybody needed, he was that person to them. He was always a bartender, you know. He had that relationship. Everybody was kind of like his regulars. We all, like, had our own thing with him. And, you know, none of the relationships were the same. It was kind of amazing.
Yeah.
But it's true.
I remember he wrote a thing for me a couple of years ago about the bartender at the Ritz, Norman.
Norman Bukhofser.
Yeah, and enormous famous who retired, you know, I think only a year or two ago. And he was famous for his Manhattans. Gary would spend a lot of time at the Ritz. It was the one on Central Park South. Norman also, you could never get a recipe out of him. It was always different ratio depending upon the whiskey you wanted and the vermouth. And I remember Gary said that he went in and, you know, he'd always normally say, "Oh, Mr. Regan, wonderful to have you." And he'd be like, call me Gary, like, "Oh, please, I'm here all the time." Right? And it's like, "Oh, of course, Mr. Regan, whatever you want, Mr. Regan." Gary comes in with some friend and like immediately Norman starts calling him like, "Bill, hey, Bill, how's it going, buddy?" And Gary's like, "What the?" You know, and the whole night, you know, "Yes, Mr. Regan, what can I get you?" Like, "Bill, another," you know, going on and on, right? And Gary's just getting real steamed, right? He's like, you know, and finally he's like, "Norman, come over here. Like, I've been coming for years. I've been telling you to call me Gary. You know, this guy comes in first night. You're calling him by his first name. Why won't you call me Gary? Like, this driving me." And Norman's like, "Come here, Gary." And it's like, "I'm doing it because I knew it would drive you fucking crazy." Gary loved it. He loved it. Yeah. And it totally
Norman was going to come, but he's pretty sick.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't live in town anymore.
Oh.
I saw he was on the list for the tribute.
And Norman was, I mean, he's a legendary. I mean, he deserves his own show.
I love him.
I know. He's,
you know what Norman's famous saying goes?
What was that?
"I don't mix drinks. I mix people."
Yeah. He was also one of my other mentors in life, David Granger, the editor of Esquire. He was David Granger was a favorite customer of Norman's as well.
I mean, he, you know, I think he was a guest at Liam Neeson's wedding. You know, all these, you know, celebrities who stayed at the Ritz love Norman. His bar was like four seats. And it's, I love the image of just Gary sitting there for years, almost as like his co-host, you know, of like of the Ritz bar, you know, Gary and Norman show. I mean, you know, it's no wonder he was able to do the Paul's radio show. He had years of experience co-hosting this celebrity the show. Yeah, I mean, what I wouldn't give to sit at that bar.
Oh, can you imagine?
The two of them.
Yeah, back in the day.
Unbelievable.
Well, those are the bars, you know, where the saying is true. You don't go to bars, you go to bartenders. I mean, that's the only reason I went to that bar.
Yeah. Otherwise, why would you go?
Food in that bar.
No. Yeah. Why would you go?
No. I mean, it was you know, it was a small bar, right? You would miss it if you weren't looking for it. Only a few seats, you know, and you just walk right by in the hotel.
But I mean, I think that was what Gaz was always trying to impart to younger bartenders is be somebody, you know? Don't just be like a drink mixer. Be somebody. Be a person. Yeah. Be a personality. Use your personality. Grow a personality.
Yeah.
You know, it
borrow one to start.
Yeah, borrow one to start. Exactly. Yeah. But that's how you get noticed.
His seminars on mindful bartending and really thinking through your experience with the guest and being entertaining. Gaz, another funny story that I have is when we opened the Pegu Club. And, you know, we're running around like crazy and trying to get everything done. And we're ready for our very first friends and family. And I think most of you were there, right? And Gaz was at the front door. Like, he had to be the first one to come in. and we opened the door and he literally ran up the stairs, went right to the bar and went up to Phil Ward and was like, "I want a Pegu Club." And it was so important that he was the first one to have the very first Pegu Club at the Pegu Club.
That's a column.
And he walked around and you all, and it was, you know, it was like Dale that came in and Dave came, and he looked at both of you and was like, "I was the first." Right. Let it be known.
Let it be known.
Write that in your history
for the
book,
annals.
Dave.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, God.
Well, thank you both for joining us today and celebrating the one and only Gary Regan, Gaz to many. You know, he'll be sorely missed by, I think, all of us.
All of us.
God knows how many other people around the world whose lives he definitely touched and changed and, you know, mentored. So we'll raise a finger-stirred Negroni to Gary. I'll never think of a Negroni again without him. So.
That's right.
Cheers.
We'll miss you, Gaz.
We'll miss you, Gaz.
These celebrations are taking place around the world, by the way.
He traveled everywhere and made friends everywhere he went. And also people he really pissed off. They're squares and screw them. Cheers.
Dave and I encourage you to drink responsibly always.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.